More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready for Smart Money Happy Hour. Pull up a chair. It's the happy hour you wish your friends were having.
Mix two money experts with some hot takes and a splash of nostalgia, and you get me, George Camel.
And me, Rachel Cruz, talking unfiltered about what's going on in the world, pop culture, and how to afford a life you love.
We're talking money, celebrity budgets, and my budget for my two French bulldogs. It's a lot.
You'll hear it all on Smart Money Happy Hour. Listen on the iHeart app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Buck Brief. We've got Alex Berenson with us, the man who was right about COVID, which I think is a phenomenally important thing to have been right about. And so we're honored to have him here with us today. Unreported Truths is his Substack. I'm a subscriber. So full disclosure, recommend you all subscribe as well. Mr. Alex Berenson, always an honor and a privilege, sir. So is Fauci changing his name and, you know, like living in the Yukon somewhere? I don't think so. Somehow the evil little Smurf got away with it all.
I wouldn't say he's changed his name. I'd say he's, you know, picking up $100,000 a speaking appearance, and he's got a book coming out in June where he will, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, not tell us the truth about everything that he knows. But, you know, I suspect that book will be released to the, you know, loud hosannas of the same people who've been talking about how wonderful a job he did for the last 4 years. It'll be interesting to see if there's any sort of critical questioning of, you know, particularly of the way he tried to steer, you know, the investigation into the origins of COVID early on. I just don't anticipate he's going to get a lot of pushback. We'll see.
No, I don't think he will. I think, unfortunately, the problem, and this was a worry that I had all along during COVID, that they used force to make so many people complicit in the whole thing that everyone at some level, like, feel like your hands, like, you know, I'll just admit, like, I didn't want to be banned from all New York restaurants, and I didn't want to falsify my, so I got the J&J shot. I thought that was the halfway measure. I wish I could sit here and say I refused because I didn't think it, I got the J&J, obviously, because over the nurse's objections who gave it to me. She's like, oh, this one doesn't really work. You don't want this one. I said, no. Give me the one that's not the mRNA. I'm good, right?
Yeah.
And I wish I had gone, you know, without any of it, but I just bring it up because I think they made so many people, you know, like they sullied so many hands and you had no choice that now everyone just wants to forget it. And I kind of at some level understand that, but refuse to go along with it entirely, which is why we have you here. The lab leak.
You're absolutely correct about, I mean, I think we've talked about this before. 80% of the country now has, you know, doesn't want to hear a word about COVID. 10% is still in that sort of crazy long COVID. These are the delusional people who will tweet, you know, pictures of themselves with masks and stuff. And then 10%, you know, there's still people sort of reading my Substack fervently when I, you know, when I break news about you know, about the lab leak or about issues with the mRNAs. But I think you're right. I think most people would rather forget that they were ever vaccinated. They know the vaccine didn't really work and certainly didn't produce any kind of long-term protection. They're never going to get another COVID shot. And so they are, they just want to be done with it. And unfortunately, that's enabled, you know, the people who pushed all of this to kind of walk away. But I do think the one place where we really need to keep pressing, and you know, frankly, let's hope, and I think that this is sort of the, you know, much more likely than not, there'll be no long-term major health impacts from the mRNAs. It's just over, right? Like, barring some sort of catastrophic series of events, we're all going to just go on. I mean, not me. I didn't get vaccinated with any of them, but we're all just going to go on like it never happened. But the lab leak really matters. And it matters for a couple reasons. It matters because there are three distinct cover-ups, right? There's the original cover-up of the origins of the virus, which, you know, I think almost to a certainty came out of a lab in Wuhan, which was doing experiments to try to make coronaviruses more dangerous in an effort to come up with better antivirals and vaccines against them. Okay, we can't be sure, and we may never be able to be sure, but that's cover-up number one. Cover-up number two is that's a Chinese cover-up mostly. Cover-up number two is there were a group of Americans who were very closely, and other Western scientists, who were very closely related, linked to that Chinese lab, and had every reason to believe that this was what had happened before any of the rest of us, because they knew the research better. And they did everything possible to try to steer the investigation and the investigators away from that by saying it was racist to even bring it up, by coming up with all kinds of, you know, BS origin theories, and by basically refusing to discuss this. And then there's a third cover-up, which is the fact that the media went along with this. And in the last 4 years, as the evidence has sort of steadily accreted, and we've seen evidence of that second cover-up come out thanks to a lot of really diligent civilian detective work, they've refused to admit that. So there's three separate things going on here. And yeah, maybe we'll never know where COVID came from, and maybe we'll never have a definitive answer on, you know, how safe or dangerous the mRNAs were. It's a very, very complicated question epidemiologically. But if we can't at least have an honest conversation about the fact that these people's self-interest led them to help the Chinese hide the origins of a virus that killed millions of people, I don't know where we are as a country.
What, and I would ask you, if you would, for everyone, just in short form, based on the best information that we have access to today and the research that you've done on this issue, you know, give us just the what, you know, you mentioned those three cover-ups. So China, it comes out of the lab, then what happens, and then what do they say?
So it comes out of the lab, it starts spreading quickly. There's evidence, you know, that actually in September 2019, that's when the Chinese might have first realized they had a problem, because you know, that's when they pulled a lot of their virus sample data from an international database. Now, for example, I'm sure that data exists somewhere in an NSA database, right? Because the NSA gets access to everything that's ever gone on the internet. So I bet you that somewhere that data exists, but it is not available to any civilian. Okay, the Chinese pulled it. There's evidence that the Chinese, you know, rapidly wanted to change the filters, install higher grade stuff at the Wuhan lab in the fall of 2020. Okay, they don't contain this. It starts to leak in Wuhan. We don't know exactly when they realized it couldn't be contained, but you know, by mid-January, they shut down Wuhan. You know, they really, and then they locked down the whole country pretty much. By then it's too late, okay? And here's what I think happened. The people in the US who understood the research the best, and that would have included Fauci, or certainly some of Fauci's deputies, were very concerned. They actually thought this was deadlier than it was, okay? Because they knew the kind of research that had been proposed and proposed publicly. And this is something I wrote about in Unreported Truths less than 2 weeks ago in a story that got a fair bit of attention. Ralph Baruch, who's sort of the leading coronavirus researcher in the world, you know, this guy from North Carolina, he's at the University of North Carolina. He's an expert at, you know, at coronavirus management, let's say, at growing these viruses in the lab, at making them more dangerous. he really wanted in the 2010s, he really wanted to find a way to develop a pan coronavirus vaccine. That is to say, there are many different sub variants or variants of coronavirus. He wanted to come up with a vaccine and with antivirals that would be able to treat all or most of them. And so that is the research that was going on. There were efforts to find dangerous coronaviruses, mainly in caves in China. And there was a guy named Peter Daszak who was very involved with the Chinese on that part of it. And then there were efforts to actually figure out how the coronavirus could become most dangerous in an effort to build effective vaccines and antivirals.
I
think those people and the people who knew what research was going on were very scared in January and February 2020. And that's one reason the U.S. and, you know, and other countries locked down so hard and so fast.
That's such a critical distinction, Alex, because people would go on the air during the pandemic and they would talk about this as a bioweapon. And I was always like, well, like, it's really finding it to, they were messing with the super dangerous stuff so that they could figure out ways to cure. It's not, because the way that was framed, it always sounded to me like, this isn't like the Chinese said, let's come up with the most dangerous virus imaginable to kill the most people imaginable. And that got out, right? They were studying dangerous viruses with the idea that they could figure out how. So, I mean, would you call it a bioweapon or is like,
I would not call it a bioweapon. Right. But I would say it was an engineered virus from what we know. Okay. Here's the thing about coronavirus. It's very interesting. Before 2003, before SARS, which the original SARS, the virologists kind of viewed coronaviruses as something close to a joke. Okay. There were no coronaviruses that did much more than cause common colds in people. Then SARS came along. Wasn't that transmissible, but it had a 10% fatality rate. And in 2013, a coronavirus named MERS came along, and that really wasn't transmissible, but it had a 50% fatality rate. I mean, which is, you know, that's Ebola, that's smallpox, that's a bad virus.
That's like a civilization ender. That's a big deal.
That's right, except you couldn't really spread it, except, you know, I mean, you had to be like in a hospital breathing on a nurse for 6 hours straight. I'm exaggerating only slightly. It really didn't spread very fast. But guys like Barrick, and I mean, when I say guys like Barrick, I mean mainly Barrick himself and a handful of other people who were experts on coronavirus said, look, this is what we're talking about. This is really dangerous. You have to let us research this so that we can get out in front of the next one of these, okay? And I'm not making this up. This was all publicly discussed. And there were fights about it because there were people on the other side who said, this is a really bad idea. We do not want to do gain of function research here. The risks outweigh the rewards. Okay. But in the end, the virologists and, you know, both in the US and in China kind of pushed ahead on this. And particularly in China, they pushed ahead on it. And so, okay, 2019, this thing starts to leak. 2020, it's uncontained. And there are clues from the outset that it is probably an engineered virus. There's this thing called the furin cleavage site, which basically doesn't really exist in natural coronaviruses. And there's other evidence, okay? And what does Fauci do? What does Ralph Baric do? What does Peter Daszak do? What do basically all the leading virologists do? They say, if you want to investigate this as a virus that leaked, you are racist. You are hurting our relationship with the Chinese. You are hurting science. This is a natural virus. We're going to figure out where it came from, just like we did with the original SARS. And you are wrong. Don't do this. And for over a year, they essentially make it impossible, either really for the U.S. government or for for major news organizations or for anybody to say, let's have a, you know, this is kind of weird, guys. Let's talk about this. And by the time, listen, the Chinese probably would never have and will never admit anything anyway. But by the time that sort of that diversionary tactic was seen through and broken, it was mid-2021 and it was really too late.
All right, Alex, I got to take a moment for our sponsor here. We'll keep going on the what comes next part of your investigative journey here to try to take this, take this all the way and figure out all the missing pieces. But first up, you know, more Americans are buying gold now than at any time previously. Gold is up in value, up 13% this year. And a Gallup poll has shown that purchasing gold is often a better long-term investment than stocks and bonds. Price and value of gold is directly connected to world events. And over time, it has been a store of value. So So that's why I recommend you check out the Oxford Gold Group. I rely on the Oxford Gold Group for my gold and precious metal purchases. Nobody can predict the future, but we can take action to prepare for it. The Oxford Gold Group are real pros when it comes to buying precious metals like gold and silver, and they make it easy for you. It's who I go to for my gold and silver, which I keep here in my safe. Oxford Gold Group, give them a call, 833-995-GOLD. That's 833-995-G-O-L-D. Okay, so what do you, so we're finding out more about the cover-up, the lab leak, all this stuff. We're years into this now. I know a lot of people have moved on, but what remains to be either found out or, what are the areas of this that you want to take the investigation next?
Well, so, I mean, I think, yes, a lot of people have moved on. I do think it's important because you are talking about Tony Fauci. You're talking about the very, top scientists in the U.S. establishment. It's important to know if there's evidence that they were really talking internally about the likelihood that this did come out of a lab, what they might have been talking to the Chinese about. There are some Republicans in Congress who are continuing to push this. Rand Paul has not let this go. There are some people on the House side who are not letting this go. There are going to be hearings in May. Peter Daszak is going to testify under oath. Unless somebody from the Chinese side defects or comes out, and it's very hard to imagine that happening, we may never have the definitive answer to what happened in 2019 that likely caused this virus to be, to leak.
I got a question for you. What happened to all the variants? Remember there was like a variant every 6 months? Yeah, we got to be scared of the variants. Where are all the variants?
So here's an interesting point, right? So in 2020, the virus did very little mutating, okay? And coronaviruses historically mutate quite fast. Well, why did it do very little mutating? Because it was so perfectly adapted to human beings when it came out. Why? Because it had been passaged through a lab or it had been manipulated in a lab to be very well adapted to human beings. Okay, then what happens? Then we do this massive vaccine campaign with this very, very potent vaccine that's targeted directly at the spike. And guess what happens? Over the next 18 months from 2021 into late 2022, there's a ton of mutations in this thing, including Delta, then Omicron. Guess what? In the last 12 months, there's been much less vaccination and there's been much less mutation. So probably the virus has done really what it always, quote unquote, wanted to do. It's come to a place where it's more transmissible, less virulent. We don't have a vaccine. People aren't getting vaccinated constantly. So there's not a lot of evolutionary pressure on it to beat the vaccination. And we're done. We're where we would have been, Buck, if let's go back to 2020 and let's say there hadn't been hysteria. And, we'd done some reasonable, we tried to protect the nursing homes. We'd all live like Florida, okay? Probably we'd be right where we are right now. We'd have a less transmissible or less virulent, more transmissible variant, and we'd all be on with our lives, just like we are.
I view this whole thing now not only through the lens of they were wrong about everything and they were horrible while they're wrong about everything. Alex, I was in Miami International Airport coming back from a weekend away with my wife. They still have mask up everywhere, signs, which is... I know everyone ignores it. I understand that there's this sense like it's not a big deal anymore, except I think it's a huge deal. Like maybe I'm crazy. I sit here, I'm like, these maniacs were completely wrong about everything. I mean, everything. The whole thing was, it was top to bottom wrong. Wrong about the school closures. Wrong about lockdowns. Wrong about masks. Wrong about the vaccine efficacy and stopping transmission. They were wrong across the board. And I don't understand. I mean, Rand Paul, whom... my radio audience knows this. I love, if I could just like make someone a president, like if I just sort of go poof, like he'll never win. And I know that. So, you need someone like Trump who can actually fight the machine. But if I could just put someone in office, I think Rand Paul would actually be a phenomenal president on a number of levels. He cares. Very few other people though seem to be focused in on this. And I sit here and I'm like, I feel like we failed, or rather the system failed at every level. And there's no changes made whatsoever, except the system's ready to do it again. Is that too pessimistic?
I think, unfortunately, that's about right. And that's why, again, like, I can't fight over all of it. You know, my audience, Unreported Truths, they're pretty, they like to read about this stuff, but I need to, my feeling is, let's at least try to get some accountability for the fact that the people who knew the most about this almost certainly lied about it in 2020. If we can't forget, we're never going to get anybody to admit that the mRNAs didn't really work very well. School closures, again, they're the only thing where we'll admit that they made some mistakes. I think lockdowns, people on the left won't really admit that they shouldn't have locked down, but you notice no one ever talks about lockdowns as a future strategy anymore. So I think there's a little bit of a realization there. But the lab leak, maybe Peter Daszak, maybe Ralph Berg, maybe we can at least get these guys to testify under oath and admit what they knew. If we can't do that, then you're right. Then we're just sitting here waiting for the next, you know, medium strength virus to come along so that the world, all these people can play this game yet again.
I want to ask you now, I'm going to switch gears because, you know, you were the guy on all this stuff and some of us very much appreciated the work that you did then. I mean, when I think I got more rage both in person from people shouting at me, like random strangers, for being unmasked and things like that. Cause I just utterly, unless I was going to get arrested or like barred from the premises, I just refused to do it as much as I possibly could. But also online, people were absolutely sadistic maniacs about the whole thing. and I think I got more of it from them on the COVID stuff than anything else. So some of us very much appreciated while that was going on that, you know, you were out there taking, you know, you kind of look like Leonidas at the end of 300 where he's just like, just arrows sticking out of it. Like
I was
top
wondering
to
who would get to my hair. I must apologize. I need a haircut.
But you were covered in all those arrows. I do wonder, even if it was privately, you know, and quietly, did anyone ever come up to you and say, man, from the left specifically, man, no. I was a horrible, you know, D-bag and you were right. No, but literally no one, not a single person.
Not a single person. One person in the last 2 years has said you were right about the lockdowns. So this is just like somebody in my town, and I actually wrote about that. And somebody I know who is sort of a journalist of some note said to me privately, but this was in the context of you're wrong about the vaccines. It was sort of like, well, I it looks like you were pretty right about some of the 2020 stuff, but never said that publicly. So the answer is no. The answer is, The answer is no.
Well, there we have it. Before we're going to switch gears because you actually have really interesting insight on something that's not directly in your usual Berenson field of view, but the Trump trial situation in New York City, which is obviously big in the headlines this week. I wanted you to take some of that on because even for people, what I like is when there are people that are analyzing the legal stuff and they will say, they'll even say, look, like I'm not a Trump person or maybe, you know, I have my concerns, but that this case is the absolute dumbest, most unjust nonsense abuse possible. So we're going to talk about the New York trial in a second. But, you know, with this podcast, we're all about having deep conversations on things that impact us, the world we live in. We're just talking about COVID and lockdowns. But when it comes to the stock market, that's what columnist Mark Chaykin does in his coverage of where the markets are going and what's going to be happening. Mark worked on Wall Street for 50 years in his time on the street. He invented three new indices for the NASDAQ and has predicted some of the biggest market shifts of the past decade, including the recent focus in AI stocks. Mark is saying there's a new dawn for U.S. stocks ahead, and he predicts dozens of specific companies will be impacted in just the next 90 days' time. So Mark has agreed to share one of his favorite AI stocks to buy now with listeners to this show. He's put it all together in a presentation at 2024AIStock.com. That's 2024AIStock.com, paid for by Chaykin Analytics. Alex, the situation of the trial in New York City, take me through what you think is most absurd about it.
Well, I mean, it's all absurd. Okay. It's business. Think about what the underlying charges are. And I think, you know, you need to look at this in the context also of the civil case where there's what the media is saying about the two cases. There's what's actually happening in the two cases. And then there's like, try to think in the broadest point of view, what is the crime here? So in the civil case, which just concluded, Donald Trump faces a $500 million penalty. And the it's not a crime because it's a civil case, but the infraction that he is alleged to have committed was lying to banks about the value of assets on loans. Okay. The thing is, the banks do their own independent analysis of those loans. But more importantly than that, no one disputes that Donald Trump paid back every dime with interest at the agreed to interest rate that the bank loaned him. Okay, so the fraud, if there was fraud, had no effect. Okay, so it's as if, like, the analogy I used was, you go and make a deal with a contractor and you say to the contractor, I can pay you up front, or I'm going to pay you next week. I got all the money in my bank account right now. I can pay you next week. And you're lying when you say that, okay? You don't have the money, but you're going to get it in a week, and you don't want the contractor to, you know, go to somebody else's house. You want him to do the work right now. So he does the work. The money that you expected to come in does come in. You do pay him. He is satisfied. And then for some reason, the New York State finds out that you didn't have the money at the time when you said you did, even though you got it later. And they say you committed fraud, and they take your house. Okay, that's the civil case. That's the February insanity. Okay, this is a criminal case, so the stakes are even higher. Donald Trump could go to jail. And what is Donald Trump alleged to have done? Okay, the case gets reported as it's about hush money, it's about paying back Stormy Daniels or paying off Stormy Daniels. But it's not actually about that when you read the indictment. What it's about is that Donald Trump didn't pay Stormy Daniels directly. He paid Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen, his lawyer, paid her off, okay, for what was effectively an extortion attempt. But
what
that
is the difference often between hush money and extortion cases? I wonder about
that. Well, the difference is if you have a smart lawyer who doesn't make any specific threats. I mean, really, that's the difference. By the way, I don't think extortion should be a crime. I think extortion is something rich people use when poor people try to get money from them and aren't smart enough to have lawyers involved. But to the extent that extortion is a crime, this was extortion. Okay, even though, again, Stormy Daniels danced through the raindrops by, you know, she was selling her story, she didn't put a number on there, whatever. She didn't get charged. So in the eyes of the law, she's clean. So Michael Cohen pays her off. Okay, that is not the conduct at issue in this case, even though the state of New York is focusing on it. The conduct at issue in the indictment is that Donald Trump or the Trump Organization then paid Michael Cohen, okay? And they didn't actually pay him $130,000. They paid him $420,000. Why? Because they wanted him to be able to pay the taxes on the $130,000, and he wanted to be paid in salary, not as a reimbursement. And then they threw in some other money. So already it's complicated. It's not, there's not quite a direct line from the payment Cohen made to Stormy Daniels to the money he got from Trump, okay? But let's just look at that, okay? The crime that Donald Trump is being charged with 34 felonies for is that he misclassified in his own internal business records a payment he made to his lawyer as being for quote-unquote legal services when it was in reality, in part, a money that went to Stormy Daniels. That is the crime, okay? That is a crazy thing to face 34 felony charges for. And on top of that, there shouldn't, even in New York State, that's not a felony. It's a misdemeanor. Classifying business records improperly, and again, normally there would have to be some allegation that some third party lost money. In other words, this should come into play when, let's say, I own a restaurant and the restaurant lost $100,000 and I'm trying to raise more money for the restaurant from outsiders. And they say, we need to see your books. So I show them my books, but I forget to show them, you know, that I lost $1 million last year. Okay, that's what this is supposed to protect. It's supposed to protect outsiders from fraud, not like I'm putting an expense that I paid in one tranche instead of another tranche in my own records. Okay, but let's just say Donald Trump did this. This is a misdemeanor. It's not a felony. How are they charging it as a felony? They're charging it a felony because they're saying there's an underlying crime that he was trying to conceal. What is the underlying crime that they are claiming? Well, they've never actually come out and charged him with any underlying crime, which is weird. But what they seem to have settled on is that the crime was improperly trying to influence the 2016 election. Okay, so that's a felony. He engaged in a criminal conspiracy to influence the 2016 election, in which he was a candidate, by the way. So influencing an election and running for president, I'm not sure how you distinguish those things. But let's say he did that, okay? Let's say the money to Stormy Daniels was part of a conspiracy to influence the 2016 election. Here is the deepest problem of all in this crazy case. He's not being charged for those payments. He's being charged for activity that he did in 2017, falsifying these business records. So the payments to Michael Cohen started in 2017. The election was in 2016. How can New York State say with a straight face that Donald Trump committed an act designed to influence the 2016 election after the 2016 election was concluded? Unless they're going to say he had a time machine, which I didn't see in the indictment anywhere. So both the sort of like overall charges here and the specifics of the charges are insane. Okay. And once you actually sit down and read this, it looks terrible. It looks like New York State is just out to get Donald Trump by any means necessary. They went after him for $500 million for a bunch of loans that he repaid. And now they're charging him with felonies based on something that on their own legal theory doesn't make any sense. And these are all Democrats. Okay. They're all, you know, hard left Democrats. He's being tried in Manhattan, which went 85-15 against him in 2020. I mean, look, I said this today on Twitter. I didn't vote for Donald Trump in 2020. I don't really like Donald Trump. I am not voting for him in 2024. I'm not voting for Biden. I didn't vote for Biden in 2020 either. Not voting for either of these guys. But to anybody who believes that the rule of law actually matters and that you, like, your conduct should mean something to the crime that you're charged with, and that the crime should have some, the seriousness of the offense, some relationship to what you did. You should be terrified by this. Yeah. This is like you speed through a red light and they take your car away and throw you in jail.
Yeah, it's outrageous. Everyone should go check out Alex Berenson, Unreported Truths. We went long on the podcast. It's always so much fun to have him on, but on Substack, Unreported Truths. No, it's great, man. We miss you. We haven't had you on the show in a bit. Unreported Truths on Substack. And Alex, we'll have you back soon. Thank you for all your work. And thank you for standing strong, especially on masks and the vax madness. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you, Buck.
Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to improving the lives of America's veterans, first responders, and their families. For over 20 years, the foundation has helped America keep its solemn promise to never forget. Tunnel to Towers provides mortgage-free homes to Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders with young children, and builds specially adapted smart homes for catastrophically injured veterans, as well as work to eradicate veteran homelessness. David Marshall served in the Army during World War II and fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He's never forgotten the sacrifices of his comrades in arms, nor the efforts of first responders on 9/11 and in the days and months that followed. He is a loyal and proud foundation donor. Tunnel to Towers is committed to supporting veterans, first responders, and their families, and so many of them need your help. Join the foundation on its mission to do good and never forget. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's t2t.org.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.